Welcome to the Prepare Podcast. This is a Salvation Army Central Territory podcast produced by the Women's Ministries Department. On the Prepare Podcast, I meet with women of faith and in ministry to learn from their experiences and wisdom to help prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. And I am your host, Sarah McCula. This month, I meet with Pilar Dunning. Pilar works in the Social Services Department here at Central Territory Headquarters. Pilar has been a trainer on human trafficking and dynamics for 10 years and has experience providing direct services to survivors of human trafficking. She has been passionate about social justice and global missions since her first experience in missions through the Central Territory's Summer Mission Team program for young adults back in 2002. She's been a social worker for 11 years and has worked in various settings including child welfare, children's hospital social work, older adults ministry, and anti-trafficking. If you've ever had questions about what human trafficking is or how the Salvation Army is engaged in the fight against human trafficking, Pilar might answer all of your questions during the course of this interview. I hope you're inspired by her passion for justice and equality. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Pilar.
Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thanks.
So glad you could join me this day.
It's a beautiful day.
Yes, it is. And our listeners might be able to hear our lawnmowers outside.
They might, yeah.
Because it's spring and the grass is growing and here we go. Okay.
It's a good day to mow the lawn.
Exactly. Okay. Well, you know, this was an easy schedule because you're just the floor below me here at Territorial Headquarters in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. And you come from the Social Services Department, Pilar?
I do.
And I am going to read just a little touch of your bio. I'm going to let you share with our listeners where your passion originated and your different experiences in the last 10, 12 plus years and how you got involved in social services and social justice. But here I will give a little description of you and then you'll take over. So Pilar Meyer Dunning, LCSW, what does that stand for?
Licensed Clinical Social Worker.
All right. Is the program consultant for children and at-risk youth for the Salvation Army Central Territory. In this capacity, Ms. Dunning supports diverse programs across 11 Midwest states that provide services to youth and families. And in addition to this, she also leads the Salvation Army's anti-trafficking initiative across this region. And prior to her current role, she served as the program manager for the Salvation Army Stop It program, initiative against human trafficking in Chicago, Illinois. I'll stop there. It goes on to talk about the different professional training you've provided to a number of different organizations and services. And, but you're going to explain it a lot better than me. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the origin of this passion that you have for serving people and what brought you into social services. So, Pilar, tell us about your career and experiences and journey in social services.
Thank you, Sarah, for the nice introduction.
I'll try.
So I think it all goes back to, it all started on a dark and stormy night, but It all goes back to, I think, when I was a impressionable teen, kind of looking for a way to fit in and a way to experience life in a different way than what I grew up. So I grew up in the Salvation Army, grew up in the Midwest. My parents are officers and saw this very specific way of doing outreach kind of within the community, right? So a lot of people would come into our core that my parents were at and get services or get support. But trying to understand what further beyond that, what ways I could get involved in the Salvation Army and in kind of ministry beyond the United States. And so I think being interested in missions, being interested in serving other people is something that I really grew up feeling like I wanted to do, but not sure quite how to do that. And so my first experience really in discovering that was doing a summer mission team in 2002, going to Australia of all places. And when we think of Australia, we don't really think of a country that needs a lot of missionary support. But what I really found was supporting the people who were doing ministry in Australia was something in and of itself that was a mission. And then seeing some of the other marginalized groups and populations, the Aboriginal groups, and learning about some of the other things that that really plagued the people in Australia, and figuring out what that looked like in kind of my own process of understanding what I can do to make a difference in the world, I guess. And through that experience, I decided to go to college and major in social work. Again, I think social work always kind of made sense to me growing up in the Salvation Army, being very social service minded and wanting to help other people. And then my second summer mission team was to Nigeria, and that was much more a very kind of classic, I guess, missional experience of seeing a lot of impoverished people, a lot of gender-based inequality. So realizing and understanding that men and women in certain cultures are treated very differently, and seeing that firsthand was something that I really remember sticking out to me. And then after coming back from that trip, researching a lot of some of the gender-based violence that happens in African countries is, again, something that led me kind of on the path that I am now. And then after researching the gender-based violence, understanding human trafficking and really that the global perspective of what human trafficking is, and yes, it goes beyond kind of the slave trade of our early roots as a country, and then now what that looks like in our own country, not just internationally. So all of that kind of led me on this path to figuring out what I can do, where I'm at, and also being a professional in that field, because that's something that's different too, is doing the education piece and really becoming a expert in social work or becoming a social worker. And then in that field, figuring out what your niche is. So the kind of personal and spiritual and faith-based piece matching with the professional piece is something that I've really worked on.
So where did you get your degrees in social work?
So I went to a very small Bible college in West Michigan. It was called Reformed Bible College and now is Kuiper College. And so I got my bachelor's of social work there and then did my master's at Dominican University, which has a real emphasis on international and global social work. And that's what drew me to that.
Can you kind of give us the path, your career path, where you started and now where you're at?
Yeah. So when I started college, I kind of bounced around the different majors that I wanted to do. So I thought about missions, I thought about sociology, and then social work really had the broadest kind of option base, I guess. So you could do many things. You could do child welfare, individual counseling, family therapy. And so that's really what drew me to the bachelor's level. And then after being in that, realizing that in social work, you really can't do much without a master's degree. So I spent 2 years doing some work for a child welfare agency and then moved to Chicago in 2007 and started with the Stop It program to do anti-trafficking work. And then after that is when I decided I need to go back and get my master's degree so that I can continue on that path of assisting other people and kind of helping other people, and also making a career out of it, because at a bachelor's level you can't really get licensed or anything.
So that was at Dominican University, is that
Dominican,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is in a Chicago suburb.
Mm-hmm. And so what was Stop It like? Can you talk a bit about Stop It?
Yeah, so the way that I became aware of trafficking was in 2006. There was the Salvation Army has a international weekend of prayer and fasting for victims of human trafficking. And I volunteered at our small corps in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Fulton Heights Corps, to host a prayer morning and education kind of summit on trafficking. And we had a few people attend. And that was really when God started stirring my heart to be working kind of in that field, or the interest in trafficking. Shortly after that, there was a posting for a position in Chicago. And I said to my husband, I was like, I feel like I really want to apply for this and I want to go for it, not thinking it would ever work out because I have no experience and was only 1 year kind of out of my bachelor's degree. But I came, interviewed, and that's where I started working in April of 2007. So that's about 10 years ago. And in that position, I really learned a ton about trafficking. It's like trial by fire. So really going in and learning what trafficking is in a very short amount of time, being prepared to do presentations and do outreach and to really talk to people in a meaningful way about what trafficking looks like in the United States and what trafficking looks like locally in the Chicagoland area. At that time, the focus was really still on international trafficking. So the idea that a lot of trafficking happening was foreign-born survivors or people being brought to our country. Soon after that, realizing that there's a lot of domestic trafficking that happens here. So people who are exploited that we would normally label as being a prostitute or being a whore or something like that. And those are people who are actually under pimp control or who are doing those things because they feel like they have no other options. And so really realizing that it's not international trafficking coming to the U.S., it's our own people here who are experiencing that violence and that exploitation.
And what, you know, what I understand about Stop It that kind of makes it unique, because there's different approaches, right, to combating this issue is it's not like a rescue mission, but it's about, and I'm learning this from conversations with you, Lindsay Bailey, Elise Dobney, that it's providing the opportunity with resources, but it's really about the would you call them victim?
Survivor,
okay. Mm-hmm. Those are good words for our listeners to know, that the survivor to choose to pursue leaving,
yeah,
and finding resources through a program like Stop It to find a way out of that life. Is that,
yeah,
can you say it better than me?
Totally. I sure can. No guarantees on that, but I think the idea is that we all, anybody has an idea of the perfect way to do something, right? We can look at a circumstance and say, this is what somebody should do to get out of that, or this is what somebody should do to make a better choice or to better themselves. And what people actually need is somebody to come alongside them and say, hey, these are your options should you choose to want to do something else. And I think that context really applies in what Stop It's philosophy is that people are experts in their own lives and they have the ability and capacity to make their choices given the options that they have presented to them. So instead of saying, let me take you out of this situation and put you in something entirely different that may or may not be what you want, let's talk about what your options are and figure out how you might make that choice to leave, or how you might make the choice to do something different, or how you might make the choice to stay where you're at and how I can support you through that process. So I think the idea of, we call it like the rescue mentality or the savior complex piece is really detrimental to the work of trafficking or anti-trafficking, because all that is doing is me going in or somebody going in and telling somebody else you need to do something different. And that's not a way to build a relationship. That's not a way to empower somebody to make a better choice for their life or for their family's life.
Because what you're saying is many survivors in those situations don't have, like, they're a lot of times in that situation because they don't think they have other options. They think that that's going to create something stable, whether it's through like the family piece that gets maybe created through the manipulation from a pimp, or is that right to say?
Yeah. So in trafficking, there's two different types of trafficking, labor and sex trafficking, but specifically in the sex trafficking dynamics, there is this idea of family. There's this pimp control that looks a lot like domestic violence, in that there are periods of violence and abuse, and then it's coupled with rewards. So what ends up happening in that cycle or in that process is that it gets very muddied. So somebody might begin a relationship. So say the person being exploited is a female, person exploiting is a male. they might begin a relationship that looks a lot like a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. And then what ends up happening is through a cycle or through a process, they then start being exploited because that person has been able to manipulate them or psychologically kind of abuse them into feeling like they have to do something in order to survive. And so sometimes that looks like, you know, an exploiter saying that they need to like strip at a club, but not, you know, not exchange any sex acts, or it looks like they need to go on some dates and those dates, actually there are sexual favors being exchanged. And what is happening is they are, through psychological manipulation and psychological abuse, being made to do those things or feeling like they have to do those things. And it's all very, I mean, I could go on and on, yeah. But it's all very much about the person feeling like they have no other options, or maybe having no other options mm-hmm. available to them based on their kind of family history and what they've experienced.
So how did Stop It make those connections with those survivors?
So in 2007, actually, we went out on the street in the uptown neighborhood of Chicago from 4 p.m. until 12 a.m. doing street outreach. So we would, myself and one other young woman would go out with backpacks full of kind of resources and cards and things and just really do a lot of street outreach, which we quickly found was not a great way to make connection because the people that we encountered, especially in that neighborhood, were chronically kind of homeless. Older gentlemen who maybe didn't know about pimp-controlled prostitution back in that day. So what we found was that building relationships with community partners and other organizations and law enforcement is really what started building the base of people who needed the assistance and the case management support. So through a series of trainings, outreach events, and then really both building relationships with other service providers, that's how we started to have clients that were referred to the program. And then those clients would work with the program anywhere from a few weeks to several years, depending on where they were at in their cycle or where they were at in their process of leaving and maintaining life outside of the exploitation.
So, for example, like a police officer would, once you've established a relationship with them as Stop It, what would that scenario look like? Would like a cop contact you guys and let you know that, you know, they've arrested? Who would they arrest? That's a question I have.
Well, that's a loaded question.
Oh boy.
but so typically the relation, when I talk about relationships with law enforcement, it's usually with the FBI or Homeland Security or some other federal law enforcement. Although there is some relationship with, for instance, the Chicago Police Department or other local law enforcement, a lot of the cases that were happening were kind of above that level because they were under kind of investigation or there was a sting or something that was happening. But what it might look like is somebody gets picked up for not necessarily prostitution or not necessarily you know, exchanging a sex act or something like that, but they get picked up for something, say, drug-related or something else. And then through a series of interviews, that police officer then says, you know what, I think that they might be exploited. I'm going to refer you to the Stop It program. Here's the number. You can call them or I can call them, and then a worker will come and meet with you. So Stop It historically has done interviews at police stations when people are picked up or when there is suspected exploitation that's happening. The other thing that Stop It does that's unique is that they go out on some of those sting operations with police officers or with the FBI or with some of those other entities because they are there and available to interview and provide support kind of as that person is experiencing this trauma of either being charged or not charged, depending on the circumstance. And the reason I say that that's a loaded question is because there is a misrepresentation of people who are charged with prostitution, say, instead of the person who's actually doing the purchasing mm-hmm. of that act. And so there are some stings that are focused on recovering minors, for instance. And so they do these big stings, and they try to look at postings that have, like, younger women in them.
Like online postings. Yeah.
And then there are other ones where they focus on the Johns or the men who are purchasing sex. So depending on that, it really kind of goes in two different ways.
Mm-hmm. And another unique thing, or maybe most programs have this, but what I thought was unique about Stop It was the hotline that is available. Can you talk about that and even talk about what that looks like for a Stop It worker?
Yeah. So Stop It has an 800 number. It is 877-606-3158, and that is run by Stop It staff and volunteers 24/7 every day of the year, every hour of the day. And that is a hotline that's designed to do a few different things. One is to provide that crisis response. So police officers, somebody who's being exploited can call that and say, somebody gave me this card and they think I might want some help, or they think this might be a good resource for me. And the person who answers that is trained and has some anticipatory kind of guidance that's provided to them of how to ask questions to determine whether or not that person's being exploited. So let me break down that scenario a little bit. So somebody calls our hotline calls the hotline and says, I need some help with housing. And then that person is trained to be able to ask them whether or not they meet the criteria for trafficking. And some of those questions that we ask are, has anyone forced you to do anything against your will? Has anybody forced you to exchange sex for something and you didn't want to do it? So some of those questions really get at whether or not we would feel that that person's been exploited. And then if they are, they can be assigned a caseworker or an outreach worker to meet with them and to talk about their options. The other thing that the hotline does is it just provides community support. So if somebody is interested in getting a training, interested in hosting an event, they can call the Stop It hotline and then be routed to they can be routed to scheduling those events.
Mm-hmm. So people that are interested in supporting Stop It can become a volunteer that takes hotline calls?
Yes, absolutely. So Stop It hosts a few hotline volunteer trainings throughout the year. I think there's usually two a year, and they are comprehensive trainings that not only go over trafficking and learning the dynamics of human trafficking very in depth, but also include how to respond in crisis and then how to engage somebody in a conversation over the hotline. And then those hotline volunteers run our hotline mostly during the day and in the evenings to give our workers a break.
So is that the best way for someone to – because I know people might be listening to this or reaching out and saying, well, how do I get involved? Is that the best method to get involved in anti-trafficking support?
That's one of the ways. I think that's a good way to get involved, especially if you're in the Chicagoland area. I know that Stop It relies heavily on volunteers and volunteer support. I think that some of the other kind of bigger ways are just being aware of trafficking and being aware of language. So language is kind of one of my is one of the things that I feel really passionate about when you're talking about people who are marginalized and people who've been exploited, is really being aware of the language that's used in our own communities and our own relationships and in our kind of social circles. So being able to recognize when somebody is using language that is harmful. So things like prostitute or what I mentioned before, like prostitute or whore or juvenile prostitute, for instance, are things that we really shouldn't be saying, because that doesn't accurately represent the group that's being exploited. So things like prostituted person or somebody who's involved in prostitution or a commercially sexually exploited youth would be a more proper way of doing that. So really understanding those dynamics, I think, is the first step in being a part of kind of the resistance, I guess. And then figuring out what's happening in your own community. So across the Central Territory, there are many anti-trafficking programs that are doing similar work to Stop It, doing similar outreach, being involved in stings, being involved in case management support, and they also need volunteers. So there's a program in Nebraska, there's a program in Eastern Michigan. There is a there's a domestic violence program in Nebraska also that does anti-trafficking, anti-exploitation work. So those places also need support. And so I think recognizing that the Salvation Army really is doing those things across our territory is a way for people to get involved and to look up what how they might help.
And those are resources I can share in this blog post about for this episode, the show notes,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, so you guys, listeners, if you want to find out more about those, you can check out www.uscwomensministries.com and look for the episode 20 with Pilar. Okay, so that was a little commercial. But so moving on from Stop It, you are now here at Territorial Headquarters, THQ, and what in the description it also says that you are now leading anti-trafficking initiative across this region of the Midwest. What does that look like as you support other programs?
So one of the things that I realized while I was at Stop It is that I really enjoy helping other programs develop and create new programs. And that was something that I was able to do through training or through awareness events to help people figure out how they might have programs or have services in their own communities. And so transferring to Territorial Headquarters, that's one of the things that I'm able to do now is to help these other anti-trafficking programs do things like come up with a program plan or come up with forms and things where they can really develop strong programs. And I think it's from my experience at Stop It that I'm able to do some of that. So I am the leader of our Territorial Anti-Trafficking Council. So we have a Territorial Anti-Trafficking Council that is comprised of people from divisional staff and officers and program leaders who come together and talk about the issues that are impacting the Central Territory and the anti-trafficking work. And then I have a Communities Connections Group, the IBM Connections Group, where I post a lot of resources on training, different events, news links, and different things that just try to help people have resources for anti-trafficking awareness. And then I also do a lot of just kind of consultation with those anti-trafficking programs. So I provide support to those program managers. And if there are any other sites who are interested in starting anti-trafficking specific programs, I try to provide some support to them as well.
Okay, Pilar, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was an event you went to last year put on by the UN. It's called the Commission on the Status of Women, right?
Yep.
And I think that's really relevant to women's ministries as we want to empower women on all levels and all different backgrounds and situations. So tell us what you learned, you know, or maybe say, why did they select you to go? I think there's great reasons why, but I want to hear why you went and how that impacts us in the Salvation Army and impacts women of the Central Territory and what takeaways or applicable lessons or information you learned from that we can garner from.
I think one of the reasons I was a part of the delegation of Salvation Army representatives for the Commission on the Status of Women for the UN was because of the work in anti-trafficking that I'm doing, but also to broaden to connect what the Salvation Army is doing in the United States with the global perspective. And this was a really unique opportunity to be able to do that. So the CSW, it was the 60th year that they've had this Commission on the Status of Women. And really what it is a two-week-long, I believe, event where they have a bunch of different workshops and plenary speakers, and it's all hosted at the UN campus in New York City. It was my first time in New York City and a very unique experience. I loved it. So going to these different events, they were mostly comprised of panels. So you're learning from different people doing similar work in different countries. And so the one of the first sessions that I went to was women's leadership and community-led development. So figuring out and redefining what we mean by the word community and how we define community. And one of the things that they talked about was this idea of connecting our local community to the global. And so the connection of our problems are your problems and your problems are our problems. So the idea of issues that are happening to women across the globe are not African problems or European problems or United States problems, but they are issues that impact women of all different ethnicities and races. And that was the very first session that I went to, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the event. So some of the things that I attended were related to anti-trafficking, anti-violence, hearing from survivors who have survived different gender-based violent acts. So a survivor of female genital mutilation, talking about her experience and the kind of redemption process and the recovery process that she's been through. Somebody else who had experienced burning. She was burned because of her refusal to get married. So seeing those issues in a global context, or seeing those issues in the United States, but representing the global context, was very unique because I'm there with other Salvation Army delegates and we're all kind of together figuring out what that looks like and how we might bring that back to our own communities. So really the idea of we are all women and women's rights are very important, not only in the U.S., but across the globe. Mm-hmm. And I think figuring out ways that we can promote that within our own culture and within our own local community is something that I'm really passionate about. Empowering women to stand up for other women and empowering women to feel like they can speak out when there's something that's said that they're uncomfortable with. Those are things that sometimes are difficult for us to do as women. Mm-hmm. And it's really important because it should be equal, right? Mm-hmm. And we should be able to speak out when we feel like something makes us uncomfortable.
Now, did they address anything? What's coming to mind for me is I went to I can't remember what it's called, but it was because it was like 9 years ago. I went to this kind of lobby day in D.C. about what was going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo and really like rape being used as a weapon of war against women. And one of the questions I had, and I've never felt like I've really gotten an adequate answer, so I don't know if you could answer it or not based on what you saw at the UN, but if we look at this as like a problem and like in symptoms and the cause and the root, you know, we should keep empowering women to learn and have the confidence to know how to stand up for themselves and to feel confident in their own rights and what should or shouldn't be done against them or towards them. But we can keep doing that, but the problem is, I'm not saying the problem is men. Don't hear me wrong, listeners. But we can, until we address those issues with, and again, I don't want to say the perpetrator, unless it is an actual crime against a woman. How do we do that? Like, are there programs that are addressing issues with men that are abusing or manipulating, and so on?
That's a great question, because one of the sessions that I went to was on engaging men in the anti-violence movement, or engaging men in fighting domestic violence. And some of the things that they talked about were that there is an idea, and we see it as a systemic issue. Let's say it's a systemic issue of a unequal power balance between men and women. And I think it's easier sometimes to see in other cultures and other countries because it's just easier to see for some reason. And there are maybe more gender-based violent acts that are happening in other countries. But the basic idea is that in order to engage men in the anti-violence kind of movement is what we would call it, or to engage men in fighting domestic violence, is that we need to encourage men and to hold men accountable to stop believing that they can dominate women, or to stop believing that men have power over women. And I know that this is such a sensitive subject, mm-hmm. right? Because equality is something that's really important for women and men to talk about and to understand, because in our society and in our systems that are in place in the United States especially, there is unequal power. There is unequal distribution of power between men and women. But going back to the UN, right? So some of this is working with men to believe and encouraging men and educating men that women are equal and that women should be treated as equal with them. And then also empowering women to stand up to the systemic kind of inequality that they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. Going back to your question, though, of the really kind of the root of those issues, there are some organizations that are doing work with men, doing some really innovative educational things, and I can give you that information.
Yeah,
they're international, mm-hmm. of course, mm-hmm. But they are doing some really neat campaigns on encouraging men to stand up to other men when they see a potential domestic violence mm-hmm. situation, or when they see a man who's treating a woman and it's out of line, really empowering those men to step up and say, hey, that's not okay, mm-hmm. and you should not be doing that. And I think that is something that's really unique and also really powerful, because when it's coming from somebody else who you consider your equal, you treat it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think there's – I mean, that's, I didn't mean to ask it in a way of like – you know, nothing is happening, because things are happening. Because even I found this Facebook group or page about this man that mentors young boys and men in Detroit, and building up their confidence and helping them. Because I think that's a lot of it sometimes boils down to, is for some reason a lack of confidence, and that's women can be an easy target to display some kind of power over. And so I think trying to get to these men before they're even men,
right,
to break a cycle of what they might already see happening in their community or neighborhood, and to it from a faith perspective, highlighting that we are all made in the image of God, including women, mm-hmm. and you know, that reminds me of one of my favorite verses from Galatians. It's Galatians 3:28. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. So, you know, even from, you know, because UN's not faith-based.
Right.
But we are. Mm-hmm. And how can we encourage our listeners to practice being advocates for women in their day-to-day life through prayer, Bible study? You know, do you have any recommendations? I'm sure we can find a number of them, but is there anything that you've personally practiced that could be helpful to our listeners?
So one of the unique things of the CSW, the UN experience that I had last year, was that there was a huge representation of faith-based organizations. We actually had our own there was an ecumenical faith-based gathering where everybody came together.
A kindred session.
That's great. Kindred session. We had devotions every morning, and so there was a really positive spirit of, even though we are at a secular or a, you know, international event that doesn't have a faith-based perspective, we're representing that. And I think that's also very unique to the Salvation Army, too, because we have men and women pastors. We have both of those, that representation, and really connecting with other groups who are doing some of that work, who might not have that faith perspective, and we do. So what are some of the unique things that the Salvation Army can offer and the Salvation Army can do to step up and stand up for some of that exploitation, or stand up for equal rights, I guess. So some of the things that I've encountered, or kind of some of my faith journey in,
reconciling how I can see so many awful things happening to people and believing that God is still good, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of at the root of...
Yeah, it's a starting point.
Yeah, and so I think really opening myself up to listening and reading experts. So understanding that these things are happening, and then kind of reconciling what I can be doing to make a difference. And my journey has really been going through that professional process of getting my degree and figuring out where in social work I can serve and really be aligned with what I feel like God's calling me to do. And other people, it might be volunteering, or it might be really learning about what those issues are that speak to them. Trafficking is not going to speak to everybody, and domestic violence isn't going to speak to everybody. But maybe there's a mentoring relationship or something that you can pour into that really helps you feel like this potential can fight against this one injustice that I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's really been looking at scripture. And I know it's, I don't know if cliche, but the Micah 6:8 is my verse of, you know, what does the Lord require of you? And really, loving justice and pursuing justice and then walking humbly with my God, I think are the things that I've really felt called to do. And it's simple. I mean, it's one verse. And it's not simple. It's very complex. Yeah. But that idea of figuring out where I fit in and what my thing is and what my niche is.
That's always what I recommend to when folks feel they want to be involved in something and they don't know where to start. They don't know what their calling mm-hmm. is in the kingdom of God. The best place to start is in prayer and the scriptures. And when you really don't know what to do, look at the verses that give instruction. Mm-hmm. Like you just said, what does the Lord require of you? Mm-hmm. What does he require of me? To love mercy mm-hmm. and to walk humbly with God. So what does that look like now that you see it in the Word of God? What is that going to look like in my personal life as I encounter my kids, my husband, my coworkers? What is, you know, my community? And then just keep digging into the Word of God. Where are those instructional verses where it says either commands or what he just wants you to do? Because there's the verses that start with like do. Mm-hmm. Or so on.
Action verbs.
Thank you. Yeah. So glad to have you here for so many reasons. So anytime there's an action verb in the Bible, pay attention and apply that to your life, and he will guide you, and he will open doors, and he will reveal where you are to take that actual action in life, in your community, in your church, in your friendships, in your home, and so on. So that's a really easy, but like you said, complicated and hard starting point, because the answer isn't always seems so obvious, but it is obvious when you look at the Word of God, because he tells you exactly what to do. Yeah. So start there.
Yeah.
A few times, Pilar, you've mentioned domestic abuse. Can you speak more about that and what the Salvation Army's response is in those areas? Is that something that is getting responded to? And is that, are people coming forward? Is that usually through the social services programs at the core level? Can you talk to that?
Yeah. So domestic violence, like a lot of other cultural issues in the United States, have gained momentum over the years. So it started with there was a law that was passed, the Violence Against Women Act, is something that has really encouraged people to step out and speak out against domestic violence. But within the Salvation Army Church, there also has been, there have been, and there are programs that exist to assist people with exiting domestic violence. So we have a couple of shelters that are domestic violence specific shelters for women and their children to go to when they need support. We have some counseling programs, one that I know of in Nebraska, one in the Chicago area, one I believe in Minnesota as well, that work specifically with people who are being abused to get some counseling and to come up with safety plans to exit their circumstances. Domestic violence is one of those things similar to human trafficking where that it's been around, But it's not something that we talked about. It was not something that was appropriate to talk about because the relationship between a husband and wife is a private thing that is their relationship. And with the education and with churches and faith-based groups speaking out against that, there has been a lot of movement, and there are more resources for people who are being abused in domestic violence situations. So the Salvation Army does do work with that. People can access support through local core or local community centers, but also there are some specialized services. And then recognizing, too, that abuse in any form, abuse can look like verbal abuse and physical abuse, and those things are experienced in domestic violence circumstances. It doesn't have to be between a husband and wife. It doesn't have to be a male to female. It could be female to male. There are male victims of domestic violence as well. So recognizing that the church does have a place to respond to that and to speak out against that, and the Salvation Army is doing some of that work.
What's nice about all these having good relationship with other organizations is that the Salvation Army does a lot, but we don't do everything. But we do have resources and partnerships to connect survivors or individuals with the right support. Is that right? Like the Salvation Army is pretty well connected.
Yes. So if there is a Salvation Army site that, say, doesn't have a domestic violence program or doesn't have a domestic violence service that they provide, they would have a resource within their community that they can certainly connect somebody to. There are also a variety of hotlines, and there are statewide hotlines where somebody can call for support, and the Salvation Army usually knows of those or can partner together with some of those agencies. And I think also recognizing that people who come in for support through our core community centers might be survivors or victims of abuse. So even being aware of that, so somebody who comes in for a food box or who's saying that they need food might be experiencing some of that violence, and really being open to engaging in that discussion and just the awareness of that person who's coming in isn't coming in just for one thing. What are some other holistic ways that we can support them, I think, is a really unique thing that the Salvation Army can offer.
Very good. All right, Pilar, we're going to shift because that's all been very educational, a little heavy.
A little bit.
But really good. I mean, like, I know a lot of our listeners have questions about these programs and about the Salvation Army's response, and even trying to sort out their own feelings and callings to support these kind of programs and these families or individuals. So that's all been great, and I thank you so much for what you have brought to the Prepare podcast so far. But let's lighten the load just a little bit, just for the very end, because we approached this this episode really interview kind of based and conversational. They're usually very conversational, but I want to hear more about you. And if you listened to other episodes, we might ask our guest, or I might ask our guest, if we knew you, we would know this, or even earlier in our beginnings, would ask for some fun recommendations, like three things you're really into, you know, whether it's, you know, Pilates. No one said Pilates yet.
But definitely not Pilates.
Whether you're into house plants like me right now. Which one do you want to take? Do you want to give some recommendations of things you love, or just not recommendations necessarily, just like sharing a few things that you really are into? Or do you want to share one of the if you knew me, you would know?
Okay, well, I prepared the if you knew me.
Oh, good.
I answered, I did like one or two ideas.
All right, you choose. Okay. Why don't you do two?
Okay.
Pilar, if we knew you, we would know.
That my name is Pilar, which is a Spanish name, and I am not Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but my parents heard the name in the 80s in Kentucky and liked it. And the meaning of it means pillar or strength, and they coupled it with my middle name, Joy. So my family refers to me as the Pillar of Joy, or PJ, or Peach.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really cool.
So a lot of people are, when they meet me, are like, oh, I was expecting you not to look like freckled and pale, but I am, and it's been a unique name and an interesting little fact.
Yeah,
about myself.
I did always wonder that, but I didn't ask. So thank you for answering that question.
I also learned from a very early age to say my name and then spell it for people right away. So when I was little, it was, my name is Pilar, P-I-L-A-R.
Good call. Yeah. It's not a common name we hear in the Midwest.
No, so. It's not.
Which is cool to have a unique name, if that's your perspective.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm like, you're as an Sarah. 80s baby, mm-hmm. named Sarah. Yeah, I'm Sarah. I was Sarah K, and now I'm Sarah M, because Sarah is very, very popular name from the 80s. So yeah. I would have loved a unique name. I love my name, but.
Sometimes, honestly, when I go to Starbucks, I use my middle name or my husband's name.
Yeah, that's easier.
Because it's usually butchered.
Yeah. Okay, let's do the next one. If we knew you, we would know.
So this is also something that I'm really into is essential oils.
Oh, yeah.
Which Sarah knows already. Mm-hmm. But I do love them. And I love, my favorite one is lavender. And I love, like, mixing and doing my own kind of concoctions of different scents and sprays and cleaning and all of that, which is something that's super fun and kind of a hobby, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A little bit of a hobby.
Yeah. See, I view you as an expert in anything that you take on, you research, and you become it. Like,
that is true. That is true.
Essential oil questions come to you. Questions about macros. I come to you.
My most recent obsession is macros.
Yeah. What goes in our body is very important.
It is. It is. But yeah, those are a few things about me.
All right, great.
Unrelated to the violence heavy work.
So, yeah. Got to have a healthy outlet. Mm-hmm. And you do. Mm-hmm. All right, Pilar, thank you so much for coming on the Prepare Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening. If you want to check out the programs and resources Pilar mentioned in the episode, please visit www.uscwomensministries.com. Click on the episode 20 link. See you next time.